It's hard to measure a pleasure or an itch. You're listening to Leaning Toward Wisdom, the podcast, Modern Tales of an Ancient Pursuit. It is season 2020, episode 9. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Cantrell. I am your host here. Ever to be adored, talented. I don't know. We're going to talk about that today. Jason Wilbur, he was John Prine's longtime lead guitarist and musical director. And those of you that do not know, John died during this pandemic. But Jason released a new album after John passed. It's just a few weeks old now. The album is entitled Time Traveler. It contains a song, Poet's Life. And today's show title is a lyric from that song. Jason sings the question, how do you measure a pleasure or an itch? I'm glad that you're here. I hope you and yours are safe. As I hit the record button, today is Monday, June the 29th, 2020. And here in Texas, COVID-19 is having a field day. Well, it's pretty much been having a field day the whole time, hasn't it? We reopened in the state some weeks ago and went to 25%, and then within a couple of weeks, we got our way up to 50%, meaning like restaurants, they could, you know, businesses could be at 50% capacity when it came to humans under the roof of the building. That didn't last. Then all of a sudden, the numbers began to spike. It is what it is, as they say. How do you measure a pleasure or an itch? Shoot fire. We can't measure this pandemic. So Jason sings a great question. How are you going to measure a pleasure or an itch? I don't know. But I don't know how you measure sadness, sorrow, disappointment, or a host of other kind of things either. So my inability to measure such things, well, it runs in every direction. Lately, I have been sharing way too much Billy Strings with the private Facebook group. Billy Strings is William Apostol. I'm not sure how he pronounced. That's his given name, his birth name. He's a 27-year-old guitar whiz kid who combines heavy metal, which he got into at a really young age when he was in his early teens, with bluegrass. Bluegrass is, well, that's his roots. Yeah, I know. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? Well, it is. It is. It's completely crazy. It's brilliant. I'm going to embed over at the show notes, if you go to leaningtowardwisdom.com, find season 2020, episode 9. I'm going to insert a video performance of Billy Strings performing his song Turmoil and Tinfoil. And tinfoil doesn't have to do with a baked potato or anything like that. It has to do with, the use of foil in drugs. Billy's one of those artists that I will binge on a few times a year. I'll listen to him throughout the year, but something happens to me. When I get in a Billy Strings mode, I'm all in. And I mean, I'll just listen and I'll watch everything I can for a couple of weeks. Well, right now I'm going to tell you, he has dominated the month of June in 2020. I can't tell you why, other than I have seen him do some live streaming through this pandemic, and maybe that's got something to do with it. But I do this a couple of three times a year. I mean, the man will get, he will get weeks or the better part of a month a few times a year, which is kind of phenomenal to me as I think about it. And I posted this over the Facebook group that I was binging on him, and I couldn't think of, and I've thought about it since, I don't know that I do that with anybody else. And I'm mostly just in complete amazement at how somebody like him can be so proficient at something like the guitar at such a, well, I say at such a young age, but you know, the kid, I mean, he's been playing all of his life, so it's not like he doesn't have years and years and years invested. He does. I'm looking over in the corner here, the yellow studio, and I have an encased, a nice hard shell case, acoustic guitar, which I am unable to play. And I'm thinking of measuring the value of a guitar in Billy's hands versus me going and unsheathing my guitar over here, which is no more than 10 feet away from me, and putting that guitar in my hands. I mean, at least you could kind of sort of measure. You could measure by looking at how much income Billy earns playing the guitar versus the $0 that I'm ever going to earn playing a guitar. My only chance of making money on a guitar is if I sell mine. Uh-huh. I grew up hearing preachers deliver sermons about the powerful impact of godly women, and much of the time they would speak about how priceless a godly wife, a godly mother, a godly grandmother was. And since, well, I had all three, I can attest to the high value that they deliver, but I'm not able to measure it. And I'm reminded of a verse over in Proverbs chapter 31, verse 10, that these preachers would all recite, "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies." In other words, she's priceless. And she is. She is. I can't play the guitar, but boy, do I enjoy watching and listening to Billy Strings play his. And so in the last couple of months, or the last couple of weeks rather, this whole month of June pretty much, I have easily spent, I don't know, I mean, 20 hours a week? I'm not exaggerating. Listening to Billy Strings recordings, the ones that I've purchased, which have been all of them, or watching the YouTube concerts, I've watched all of them, and I just absolutely love watching the guy perform. I mean, there have been many nights in the last few weeks, his songs have just been earworms. I've gone to bed, and I'm just sitting here listening to it in my head over and over and over. I'm not literally listening, but I'm hearing it. And I end up getting out of bed and coming in here in the yellow studio and doing some work and click and play on another YouTube video, watching the guy do his thing. Many things are hard to measure, but maybe it's worth asking, why measure him in the first place? Especially when it comes to these things that Jason Wilbur sang about. Why measure a pleasure? Why measure an itch? And you know what he means when he says an itch. You know, something that you really, something you want to pursue. The square super logical among us would say, well, because you can't make progress unless you can measure it. Let me invite you to check out the Squircle. Yeah, you heard me right. It's a morph between circle and square. Squircle, the Squircle Academy. Yeah, Google it. I'll put a link in the notes here. Squircle Academy. If you want to investigate the difference between circles and squares, the squares get super logical, right? I mean, everything's rational. And those people are going to tell us, well, you're not going to be able to make progress unless you can measure it, which is ridiculous, of course, to a person like me who's not a square. Nor am I a circle. I'm slightly a circle. According to the assessment, I think it's over there. I think it's at Squircle Academy. You can take it for free. It'll tell you if you're a square or a circle or something in between. You know, it's ridiculous to think that you can't make progress unless you can measure something, because of course you can make progress in something that can't be measured. I mean, there are some aspects of love that might be measurable, but it's pretty hard. I'm reminded of another scripture, John chapter 15, verse 13. Greater love hath no man than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. Okay, so there's the pinnacle, right? Laying down your life for a friend is, that's, okay, that's high, high, high love. Hatred, I would suppose, hatred is the opposing extreme, I'd reckon. But then there's all that space in between. There's all that space in between, okay, well, I'm not willing to lay down my life for you, but I don't hate you either. I fell in love with my wife in the summer of 1975. After 42 years of marriage, I can honestly tell you and tell her, and she knows it, I've told her, I love her more now than then. I don't have any paperwork to prove that. Unlike the Squirkle test or whatever it's called, I haven't taken any assessment that I can go and flash in front of her nose that says, see, I can prove that I love you more. I just know how I feel, and I know what I think, and I'm able to measure it intuitively. And the reason I can do that is because I know how important she is to me now. I know how important she was to me then, and I can measure it. Man, I can measure it by a whole lot of things. I can measure it by how devastated I would be if something bad were to happen to her. I can measure it by imagining how lonely I would be without her. I can measure it by assessing intuitively the value that she provides to my life. Family, friends, allies, mentors, teacher. How do you measure their value? Billy Strings, he said something pretty interesting in a magazine interview, and I'll quote it here. Those moments are what I cherish the absolute most. For instance, when I was 6 or 7 years old, I was learning Beaumont Rag, and I just played the rhythm, but I kept messing it up on this one part. Right in the middle of the song, I said, "Stop, Dad, why don't you play it and let me listen?" I listened to what he was trying to say with the guitar, and I go, "Now let me try it again," and I nailed it. He started laughing. He reached over his guitar and squeezed my little hand. He called my grandmother and said, "Listen to your grandson right now." I was a little kid, but I'll never forget that moment. Now, there have been several moments since then, like when I got to introduce my dad to David Grisman in real life, because my dad introduced me to David Grisman when I was 7 years old. We got to sing songs all night. David Grisman is another talented guitarist, by the way. Let me play a little audio snippet. And this first clip is a snippet of an evening where Billy Strings and Brian Sutton are playing together. They're playing in some little place in Nashville, Tennessee, where they live. Well, where they now live. Billy has only been there for a few years. And these are two extraordinary pickers, but Billy is going to start, this is in between songs, and Billy is going to start the conversation. So the first voice you hear is going to be Billy Strings, and then you're going to hear the other voice, and that is Brian Sutton.
Here's another sort of a fiddle tune medley that I learned from my dad, and Doc Watson recorded this, but I'm not sure on what recording or anything, but at some point he did this medley here.
One of the cool things that, you know, when you met Billy and we started talking about, Doc Watson and Norman Blake and Tony Rice and Mack Wise and all these, it all also came back to our dads, and he and I spent a ton of time as kids playing music with, you know, people 3 times our age, but a lot of hours sitting around the house playing tunes like this with our dads, respectively.
I'm still playing.
What?
No. I'm still playing with people that are 3 times my age. Wait, you're exactly like twice my age, though.
I am twice your age.
You're still a young dude.
Still not too late to turn this car around. Go to your room.
Now, how do you put a value on two guys, one guy who, well, Brian, as he admitted, was about twice the age of Billy Strings. He's a middle-aged guy. And then Billy Strings is this guy in his, you know, mid-late 20s. And, you know, they both have really solid musical backgrounds with their family, and they both have vivid recall of the memories of being little kids and being around their family and other pickers and music being a big deal. And that, I mean, how do you put a price on that? Now listen to an onstage interview that Billy gave during one of his band's live shows. And here he is talking about the influence of his dad.
So I understand you're named after your grandfather, Grandpa Bill.
Yeah, I was born on his birthday. Yeah. I we were a resident of Kentucky at the time. My family lived in Moorhead, and my mom and dad and stuff traveled up for Grandpa's birthday, and of course I decided to show up then. Apparently they were all in the garage kind of picking and singing, and my mom was, you know, not taking part.
Yeah.
I decided to show up, you know.
Broke at a jam session, as I understand it, yeah.
It's kind of like that. I guess I wanted to come pick a few, but...
Yeah, a little early.
Yeah.
He was ready. Was your grandfather a musician, too? Was he a...
He played with his thumb
until
it turned black, and he would sing like, Angel! And he would sing like old country songs, you know. Let's see, you don't have to call me darling. He would sing that. And,
But your dad was your musical sort of mentor.
And grandpa loved my dad. You know, if my dad was over, grandpa would have, you got to sing this song and this one and that one. And he'd have him singing all night, you know, and feeding him, getting him all going.
And so when you're a kid, and your dad, as I understand it, was, as I mentioned earlier, was a fan of Doc Watson and Norman Blake and Stanley Brothers, and could sing all that stuff too. And so were you just going along in the same kind of musical path, or, you know, were you sort of veering off in some ways when you were a kid?
Well, when I was a kid, from the time I was born to the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, you know, it was Doc Watson was all I really, you know, I didn't hear Pearl Jam or Led Zeppelin or anything until later. I was spoon-fed Doc Watson as a boy, and also, you know, Bill and Lester and Earl and all that, and it was because my dad is my hero and my best friend and my mentor. You know, if he wore Levi's, I wore Levi's. If he wore a ball cap, dang it, I wore a ball cap too. Mm-hmm. And if he put his on backwards, I'd turn mine around. He put his capo on his headstock like that. I did that. I just wanted to be just like my dad, because I saw, even at a young age, I saw we'd have people over at the house, you know, picking and singing, and I'd just be getting ready to go play with my toy cars or whatever. But every once in a while, I noticed my dad in the kitchen, and everybody's standing around with a beer and singing along, and he's just, you know, singing till his face turned red, and he's just like... He really is the life of the party, and everybody is so glad that he's there, and there's so much joy. And I just was like, man, my dad is incredible, and I want to do that. You know, I want to learn how to play like him. That's what I want to do, you know.
That's cool. And it's also, I don't know if you know, but actually that's not most people's experience.
What do you mean?
They're like, my dad is, I want to do whatever my dad doesn't do.
You know?
A lot of people go, I mean, it's actually... An unusual thing, but sweet.
My parents are cool.
Yeah, I get it.
They're cool, man. They showed me cool records.
Yeah.
You know, when I was 7 years old, I remember there were two huge moments in my life. One was when my dad sat me down and said, okay, you know, I knew about Doc Watson, but he showed me Doc and Dog. He sat me down and said, this is David Grisman. You need to know this. And I was just about 7 years old. He did the same thing a little bit later with Black Sabbath when I was old enough, and it scared the heck out of me, you know. But that's when all that started. I got into Jimi Hendrix and stuff, and when I was 11, he got me a little Strat with a pig nose amp, and then
wild,
then off I went to blues guitar land, Johnny Winter, you know.
Yeah, wild.
Ask Billy to measure the gift that his dad gave him. I'm pretty sure that he would tell you there's just no measuring this. And that's why years ago MasterCard, you may remember, developed that brilliant advertising strategy that had a single punchline, priceless, priceless, because some things cannot be measured with dollars. And the truth is some things can't be measured with anything. Okay, back to the lyric of Jason Wilbur's song, it's hard to measure a pleasure or an itch. Measuring some things is clearly difficult, especially things such as what we find joyous, what we find pleasurable, or pursuits that drive us, aka these itches that we must scratch. The implication is that we are attempting to measure our own pleasure, our own itch. And you may think, well, who else would measure it? Oh, well, now listen, stop the presses. Plenty of people are willing to judge your every move. Oh, yeah, sure, they'd be willing to take a crack at measuring your pleasure or your itch, too. Why not? Is it hard? Is it impossible? Maybe not. Maybe not. We invest more of ourselves in things that matter to us. But it's not always an accurate measurement of pleasure or an itch. I mean, for example, I know some people who invest quite a lot in caring for a family member who is desperate for their help. It's not a pleasure. It's not an itch. Doesn't mean they hate it. Doesn't mean they resent it, but they're not doing it for themselves. They spend quite a lot of time in the pursuit of helping a family member. I'm thinking of some friends who have family members that are struggling with dementia and Alzheimer's. And this person matters a great deal to them, even though this person no longer even recognizes who they are. Self-sacrifice. It may be tougher to measure than our own pleasure, than our own itches. Or, I don't know, maybe it's easier. Maybe it's easier for those who are fixated on what, well, they're fixated on the responsibility more than they're fixated on what they're giving up. And that's why you often hear folks, well, I think it's among the reasons you hear people who may be prone to feeling victimized complain about, you know, what they could be or what life could be if only. And sometimes those measurements, yeah, they're not terribly accurate, though, because people often enjoy imagining loftier outcomes than are realistic. You know, if only I could devote myself to my own pursuits, well, then I'd be world class. Well, maybe, but not likely. Okay, I digress. Let's get back on track to pleasure, a pleasure, an itch. Now, why does my mind go to illicit pursuits or selfish behavior? I wish it didn't, but it often does, and it does because of the nature of my work, I suspect. Coaching and supporting people means helping people through a lot of difficult times. And there's a lot more of that than there is helping people, you know, just jump on some obvious or maybe not so obvious opportunity. There's a lot of pain in the world. There's a lot of suffering in the world. There are a lot of problems and obstacles and difficulties in the world. And we all have these tough times that require more than we may think we have to give. And so in many cases, I find myself talking with somebody, a high performer, a leader, and the conversation ends up going in a direction that I didn't plan, but it goes where life takes us. And often where life takes us is betrayal and pain and sorrow and suffering and being in a funk. And it's often caused by the selfish pursuits of people in our lives. So we jump on this Zoom call. It's a scheduled Zoom call. It's a scheduled session. And he's just not quite right. He's off. He is off. Something is clearly preoccupying him today. He's a high-level leader. And so, of course, being the curious guy that I am and seeking to understand and wanting to help, I inquire. And he breaks down. And he tells me of a teenage son who is pursuing drugs and alcohol. Well, how do you measure that kind of pleasure? How do you measure that kind of an itch on the part of a son, a broken life, a broken father, a family just turned upside down? The damage is immeasurable. And we both realize the cost of this ordeal is going to likely last a very long time. It may last lifetimes. So for this conversation, let's restrict the conversation to not those pursuits like drug abuse and alcohol abuse. let's restrict our conversation to honorable, not quite so selfish, and moral pursuits or pleasures. I'm tired of all the time that adversity requires of each of us. I really am. Especially right now. I don't know why. I've been in a bit of a funk myself the last few days. I even told my wife so. I'm really tired of adversity, and you can put a capital A on adversity. I'm really tired of adversity just dominating so much of our lives. And I get it. I understand the human condition and all that, but I'm exhausted thinking and talking about, especially now, hatred and betrayal and lack of understanding and lack of compassion and concern and all the other ways that we are able to impose harm on one another. The unkindness and the other foul behavior in the name of our selfish pursuits of happiness or our own desires. It went literally viral on Twitter the other day. It happened over in Dallas, and it was at some supermarket. And there's a lady, she has come into the location with no mask on, and evidently she's confronted by someone. You don't see that in the video. What you see is she has the shopping cart full of stuff. And I can't tell you what happened. Don't know. I know she doesn't have a mask on, and I know the mask is the deal. And she ain't going to wear one. She doesn't care who she offends. She doesn't care about anybody, right? She just cares about herself. So she's got this grocery basket full of stuff, and she is absolutely cussing a blue streak, and she's grabbing items out of this cart one by one and just throwing them onto the floor. And I'm thinking, we've lost our collective minds. You know, I'm sure in her mind she deserves the right to do whatever she pleases, no matter what. Completely oblivious to the fact that she's wrong. She's wrong. She has some responsibility to the community. Whether she agrees with it, whether she disagrees with it, who cares? It's not like we're asking a big, big sacrifice to put a piece of cloth over your face, right? But we live in this culture of I deserve to be happy. And that sound you hear, well, the sound that you don't hear, but I was really tempted to put a sound effect to this, my own, me retching over in the corner. But you also hear that when you hear a husband cheat on a wife or a wife cheat on a husband. I mean, come on. We can justify violating our marriage vows. People do it every day. Proving that we can justify just about anything because we want what we want, including a teenage boy willing to throw his life away to get high and willing to pretty much kind of disrupt or destroy the lives of a family who love him and are pretty desperate to try to save him. The business of life, I love this quote, the business of life is the acquisition of memories. You know who said that? This was another binge thing that I did. And in addition to binge watching Billy Strings, for about the, I don't know, has to be at least the fourth time, I was binging Downton Abbey. I guess at the end of June, the PBS stations, they lose their deal with the producers of Downton Abbey. And so, of course, they're leveraging it for all it's worth to try to raise money for their cause, which is perfectly understandable. But, you know, so they did a Downton Abbey marathon. And Mr. Carson, the butler in Downton Abbey, he uttered that line the other night, and I wrote it down because it was just too brilliant. The business of life is the acquisition of memories. It was a great show. And there are just some tremendous quotes in every episode, especially Lady Violet, one of my all-time favorite characters. What memories are we acquiring? What memories are we helping others acquire? I mean, it may be among one of the ways that we can measure a pleasure or an itch. We can gauge our memories and the memories of other people around us. The lady in Dallas with a shopping cart just cussing a blue streak and throwing everything out of her and storming out of the store, all captured on somebody's smartphone and then put up on YouTube or Twitter or wherever I saw it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm thinking, boy, I would hope. I could be wrong, but I would hope that that's a memory she wishes she could get back. You heard a now 27-year-old Billy Strings talk about events that happened in his life when he was just a kid, a child. He mentioned in one of those sound bites being 7 years old. Seven-year-old children, I mean, what do seven-year-old children know about a pleasure or an itch? I mean, I would suspect mostly the seven-year-olds who have and do occupy my life, I mean, they just want to play and have fun. But they will grow up and they will remember things. And little Billy has turned into one of the planet's very best guitar players. His pleasure playing the guitar and his itch to use the guitar as his voice, that first set sail when he was just a very little boy surrounded by a family who loved and played music, particularly a father who loved it so much that he passed it on to his son, forming a bond that, well, it just seems to be growing stronger over time. I'm going to embed because it's just too good of a video to not share. But there's a great video of Billy. He's presenting his dad with a custom-made guitar from Preston Thompson Guitars. Preston Thompson Guitars are the guitars that Billy plays. This is a little boutique guitar maker out of Sisters, Oregon. And they produced a Billy Strings signature model. And they made 33 of these things. They're like $8,500. Yeah, I went and checked. No, I'm not interested in buying one, but I was curious. And he presents his father. It's on video, and it's great. He presents his dad with number one out of 33. It's just a little few-minute video. You should go check it out. LeaningTowardWisdom.com, season 2020, episode, what are we up to? Episode 9? Yeah, 9. There's a great story that Billy shared on Preston Thompson's guitar YouTube channel about his dad. And his dad had an original Martin D93. For those of you that don't know, Martin is kind of the premier, big history, premier acoustic guitar manufacturer. And his dad had a Martin for years and years that Billy grew up watching his father play, and it was a Martin D93. Listen to Billy tell the story.
This is my dad's guitar. That's how I learned, is sitting on the other side of that thing. So, you know, I grew up and kind of some stuff got a little tough there for a while, just, you know, figuring out how to pay for everything. And there was, you know, times where, you know, maybe our electricity got shut off or didn't have hot running water or, you know, stuff like that. And it got to a point where my dad decided he was going to sell the Martin. The one thing in my house that had not only any kind of like money value, but had so much sentimental and family value. And he decided that he had to sell it so that he could, you know, get some money to provide for us. And don't sell the Martin, we'll figure it out, you know. So he sold the Martin. And, you know, 6 or 7 years went by or something. And by this time I'm 17 years old, I almost forgot all about it, you know. It was a big deal when he sold it. I said, don't sell it, you know, we'll figure it out. And he sold it. So then, you know, I went about my way. I ended up playing in a metal band and a bunch of stuff. And it was around when I was 16 years old, I really was getting heavy back into bluegrass and listening to Doc Watson a whole bunch. And I didn't even own an acoustic guitar at that time. I was playing electric, and I decided I wanted to get an acoustic guitar again. So I went on eBay, and I'm always looking at elderly instruments, you know. Oh, what did they get? You know, what kind of vintage, some used guitar, you know. And I came across this website that's called Unofficial Martin Guitar Forum website or something. And I was just looking at, you know, used guitars on there. And I came across this. It says D93. And I was like, you don't see those very much. You know, so I clicked on it. And it's my dad's guitar. You know, it's got his wear down by the pick guard. It's got the little cracks in the fretboard binding that I remember. You know, it's got his case, the original case. And this is like 6 or 7 years later, you know. The guitar's been gone forever. And my dad was playing on this, you know, little Sigma that had, like, terrible action. And I was just, you know, kind of sucked seeing him play that guitar because he deserved the Martin, you know. It's really a great guitar. So I found it online, and I started messaging this guy. It was a good friend, Joe Singleton. He lives in Massachusetts, I think. You see him at Grey Fox all the time. So I messaged him and said, man, this is my dad's guitar. It's been missing. We had to sell it. You know, I'm 17 years old. I don't have any money, but I will figure it out. Please don't sell it to anybody but me. And he said, man, you know, how do I know you're not just a 17-year-old kid that's like, you know, and then, you know, and he said, well, I got people that on eBay that have cash right now and this and that. And I'm saying, I just was typing it. I mean, pages, crying kind of, you know, like, I cannot believe this is my dad's guitar. And so he said, all right, you know, if it's really your dad's guitar, I'll save it for you. And then I said, well, how about, you know, can we do a payment plan? And he said, no way, man, you know. And then I convinced him to do that. I think his wife stepped in, Marla, bless her heart, and said, you know, this is special.
Right.
So he ended up letting me send him, you know, $700 for 3 months in a row. $2,100 is what he wanted for the guitar. And I took back pop bottles. I was doing various other ways of getting money, you know, in a small town as a 17-year-old kid. And figured it all out. I sent him $700 on the third of every month. And then he sent me my dad's guitar. And then I drove over to my dad's house and I brought it inside and I sat it on the table. And he was like, you know, I think he was like, yeah, oh man, like, get out of here with that. Like, is this some kind of prank or something, you know? And I was like, check it out, you know? And he could hardly open the case, you know? One latch at a time, he just kind of was like, you know, almost crippled by it. And he finally got to open it and just saw the guitar and kind of sat there and started crying. And then he pulled it out and he played John Deere Tractor, Larry Sparks' song. And a song that really reminded him of his mom. And she had passed away, you know, some in the time that guitar had been away. And that's what my dad said. He said it reminded him of his mother and kind of almost felt like, even though she was gone, like it, that she was there. And that playing it, you know, it was almost like his way of getting to talk to her again or something. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now the guitar's back in the family, and it's never leaving us again.
That's great. Amazing that you saw it.
Yeah, my mom is, she's kind of a, like, in-tune person. I don't want to say psychic, but she always said that it'll come back somehow. She was born on Halloween in 1960. She's a Scorpio, you know. She's got some kind of something going on. And she was right. You know, she said, we'll get it back someday. I don't know how or when, but that guitar's going to come back. And it did. I'm a believer of, you know, energy. And my dad put so much love into that guitar and so much, you know. And that's another reason why I'm so glad that we found it, is because, you know, someday when he's dead and gone, I'll be able to pick up that guitar and talk to him, you know?
He is 17 when he buys this guitar back, according to his story. It had been gone 6 or 7 years, which means that he was about 10 or 11 when his dad had to sell it. Pretty big impact on a 10 or 11-year-old boy who now is 17, and I don't know, you remember what you were doing at 17? And he scrapes together $700 for 3 months in a row for a total of $2,100, not to mention the letter writing campaign and the salesmanship that he had to exert to get the seller to cooperate so that he could get this guitar back into his dad's hands. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how you measure a pleasure or an itch: by the sacrifice and by the action taken. And so there's our answer. Well, it's an answer. Sacrifice, action. That's how you measure a pleasure. That's how you measure an itch. Now, there are at least a gazillion examples. And since I've been on a Billy Strings binge, I was thinking of a documentary that I saw years ago on Chet Atkins, another guitar great. Chet Atkins grew up in extreme poverty, introverted by nature, and he found it easy to sit, well, mostly alone, with a guitar in his hands. He confessed that he could sit and play for hours by himself. You know, they were out in the middle of the sticks, not much else to do. Probably contributed a little bit to it. Spending time with a guitar, it was an accurate measure of the pleasure and the itch that Chet Atkins had to play the guitar. There's a documentary, there are a couple of, at least two or three documentaries on the life of Chet Atkins. And I remember one of them, I did have to go look it up, but I had remembered this really nice quote at the end of one of these documentaries. And it was Chet speaking. And he said, "If you're lucky in this world, you'll be born in the country, and at an early age, somebody will give you a guitar, and you'll play it with your fingers. That's what it's all about." You know, and I'm thinking, well, who knows how many kids are born in the country? Who knows how many kids are born in the country and given a guitar at an early age, but don't end up being very good at it? Much less how few are talented enough and dedicated enough to earn a living at it. I just mean they're paid to play music. Never mind being good enough to become a Chet Atkins. I mean, there's only been one of him. Now, there's a bunch of really good pickers. But those are the measurements of success. Those are the measurements of success. Those are not the measurements of a pleasure or an itch. Or are they? Effort versus success. This is a long-standing debate. Now, I don't claim to have superior insight or answers to this, but it seems evident to me that success requires a degree of effort, but it is equally apparent to me that effort won't guarantee you success. Barry Sanders is in the NFL Hall of Fame. He was a running back out of Wichita, Kansas, who played college ball for Oklahoma State University and then went on to play for the still woeful Detroit Lions. And he walked away from the game in the prime of his professional life, partly because when you read the stories and you read the interviews, football just, he didn't have a good time. I mean, football was not a pleasure. It was not an itch. Well, that I remember reading that at the time and thinking, how's that possible? I mean, it just seems so improbable because he was so good at it. He was so successful at it. His talent was exceptional. And sometimes we see people like that. We see people who are extremely good at something, but the pleasure and the itch don't match the success. And the rest of us have a real difficult time understanding that because, of course, well, I don't know about you, but that has not happened to me. I'm thinking of all these people, from ex-presidents to famous Hollywood actors to athletes to all kinds of famous people in one area of human endeavor, and they enjoy painting. And they spend a lot of time painting. Yeah, some are halfway good and some are really not good at all. But the success isn't in painting. That's their itch. That's what gives them pleasure. They don't do it for success. And I could argue that their success in, okay, you're an ex-president and you're worth a gazillion dollars, or you're a famous Hollywood actor and you're worth a gazillion. Okay, well, they don't need to be known for painting. They're already well established and very successful financially at this other thing. And so that other thing affords them the luxury of spending time now doing something purely for the enjoyment of it. I could make that argument, and I think it's a good argument, because now they are unleashed from having to earn their income from it. And so they can just dive in because they love it so. All of that just proves to me that it's a really complicated thing to try to measure things that just aren't so easily measured. Sacrifice and action, that works until you insert outcomes. And now we have to spark further debate because, well, come on, we're people and we just have a really hard time not fixating on the outcome. Well, why do we have to pin outcomes on all this? Well, because it's what we do. It's how we gauge most things. And I don't know, maybe that's worth rethinking. Maybe we ought to challenge that somewhat. You know, during this pandemic, there's been a lot of conversation, especially among educators, about standardized testing because in most states, they're suspending that because, well, we're not able to test these kids. We can't control the environment. We can't put them in a classroom and time it and be on top of it. So, okay, forget it for now. And many educators are wishing that we would just do that from now on. How about we just forget, you know, that whole teach to the test kind of a notion? Because, well, we get fixated on these outcomes, and so that makes it complicated. Is it because we live in a capitalistic society here in America? Is it because we're so competitive? Is it because we love to compare ourselves against other people? Is it because we love to keep score? The answer is yes, 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 and yes. Did I say too many yeses there? The answer to all those questions is yes. True confession. One of the things that prompted today's episode was my realization that I love to do a number of things that have no real outcome other than the fact that I love them. And I'm not going to dive too deeply into things like appreciating things such as great cartoons or music. You know, you might argue, well, I mean, come on, those don't require any action. Those don't require any sacrifice on your part. Some would say they're even passive. Okay, well, I'm not so sure about that, but okay, I get the point. I'm not drawing the cartoons. I'm not creating. I'm not playing the music. So how profitable could it be? Well, thankfully for me, profitable is not the barometer. Pleasure or an itch, those are the things that matter in today's conversation. And when I'm appreciating the Ballard Street cartoons or listening to Billy Strings, I like it. It's cool. I enjoy it. I can't truly measure the pleasure that I get or the itch I have to listen to music. I really can't. But I can measure my sacrifice and I can measure my action in the time spent doing it. And the answer is it's a lot. In fact, I started the show telling you that pretty much the whole month of June has been dominated by Billy Strings. And sometimes I'm not doing anything else. That's not really the norm. Most of the time I'm going to be doing something else. I'm going to have the headphones on. Sometimes I'm walking. Sometimes I'm sitting and I'm doing nothing else. Sometimes I'm writing. Sometimes I'm sitting here doing computer work. And still, though, there are hours and hours and hours and hours spent listening to songs. So it's clearly got some degree of importance or I would not spend the time doing it because I could be doing something else. My wife listens to audiobooks. I have not listened to, I haven't listened to more than 10. I don't think I've listened to anywhere close to 10 audiobooks in my entire life. I love to read, and I'll spend hours doing that, but I don't listen to audiobooks. Okay, let me really blow your mind. I love to podcast, but I can't tell you the last podcast episode that I listened to. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Especially since this pandemic hit. I don't think I have listened to a single podcast. And I was thinking about this. Have I listened to even parts of a podcast? I don't think I've listened to even a part of a podcast. Now, I have listened, true confession, I have listened to some things that are podcasts, but they originate as live streams. Yes, I've done that. But I'm talking about going into my podcast app, downloading or clicking play. I haven't done that since the pandemic, and I can't tell you the last time I did do that. I love the medium, though. I love this communication. I love the podcast, but I don't listen to podcasts. But I love music, but I don't love and I'm not able to create music. I don't have a clue how. Plus, I lack the talent. Well, the fact is, I have a lifelong habit of failing to make the sacrifices or to take the action necessary to learn how to play music. It's clearly not important to me. Well, clearly not as important as listening. You know, there was a time in my life I spent a lot of time drawing, but I haven't done that since college. I love Ballard Street cartoons, though. I've spent time and money, so there's your sacrifice and your action. I have spent time and money proving how enjoyable Ballard Street is to me. I have spent no time, count it, zero time. I've spent no time in the last 45 years improving my ability to draw cartoons. I've spent years and countless hours behind the mic podcasting, but I have spent very, very, very little time with headphones on listening to podcasts. Because I much prefer music over podcasts when it comes to consumption, but not when it comes to creation. I'm able to create a podcast. I am not able to create music. And now these aren't up for argument in my life any more than they are in your life, right? We like what we like. We loathe what we loathe. Why? Sometimes we know, sometimes we don't know. I'm not able to measure it. Take that quote that Chad Atkins made at the end of that one documentary. Here's a kid. He was born in poverty. I mean, extraordinary poverty in Eastern Tennessee. Well, I wasn't. Not only was I not born in extreme poverty, I wasn't born in Eastern Tennessee. He picked up a guitar that belonged to a brother who played. The brother was 14 years older than him. I don't even have a brother, much less an older brother who knew how to play the guitar. Like Billy Strings, Chet's family played music. My family only played records. Would I behave differently if my circumstances had been different? We'll never know. You know, this is where the measuring thing really challenges us, because we're human beings and we have this great ability to imagine. And so our imaginations go to work on what might have been, what might have been. Late in high school and in early college, I could see myself. Well, maybe that's an overstatement. I started to say I could see myself writing for a living. But I remember telling my friends, I don't know any writers. They all live up in the Northeast, right? I mean, you got to be from New England. You had to be from Massachusetts to be a writer. Well, now that's not true. It wasn't true then, and it's not true now, but it is indicative. It's indicative of how we can perceive things and how those perceptions can fuel our choices, because my perception was you got to be from that part of the world to be a success at writing. No, because I logically knew of some great Southern writers. I knew others who were from the Northwest, but my generalization was merely the statement of a younger man who just could not see himself in a role that of being a writer, because I didn't know anybody personally who did it. So I'm thinking about this whole Billy Strings thing and him watching his dad play. I mean, come on, the fact that he had his role model, not only as his father, but somebody living in the house and somebody that he saw do this constantly, certainly had a big impact on him, right? I mean, how could it not? I didn't live with a writer. I didn't know anybody who made their living writing. Makes it really difficult to connect those dots. So did the itch or the pleasure to write, did it leave? No, it kind of morphed. it morphed into podcasting. It morphed into blogging because really at the heart of it, you know what the heart of it was, telling a story, creating tons of notebooks. Never mind that, you know, I'm not able to make a living doing it. That really isn't the point anyway. I just made sure that I did some form of it anyway. And I've done it all my life. I did get $100 one time. I wrote an article for a hockey magazine. I got paid $100. There's my professional authorship. It doesn't, does it make it more valuable or less valuable, the money that you get for the thing? You know, I mean, it just makes them part of our lives, right? We trade things, we sacrifice. Rather than play music, I listen to it. Rather than listen to podcasts, I create them. Rather than listen to books, I read them. I mean, those are personal choices that I make. You may make very different choices. I mean, my wife makes very different choices. But that's how I'm able to measure my own pleasure and itches. There was once a man who said to me constantly, I have scratched every itch I ever had. The guy was a decade or so further up the trail than me. I scratched every itch I ever had. And I remember telling him constantly, and he knew this about me, I haven't. I haven't scratched every itch I ever had because, well, many of them were, frankly, they're pretty fleeting itches. Or the pleasures just weren't strong enough or valuable enough for me to give something else up so that I could go chase those things. But isn't that what life is? Life is this constant calculation, whether we're calculating it on the fly or whether we are calculating it with short-term or long-term planning. We're really fundamentally asking the question, is it worth it? Is it worth it? Well, is it worth what? Well, whatever we're going to have to give up to chase it. Is it worth putting headphones on while clicking play to another Billy Strings concert? For you, maybe not. For me, at 3 a.m. when I can't sleep, you bet. All night long. In fact, while I've been working on preparing for this show for the umpteenth time, I've had in my headphones and over on my other monitor here, I've had the Billy Strings and his guys. He is part of a four-piece group. They played a concert at Red Rocks up in Colorado in 2019, and I've watched this thing umpteen times. Uh-huh. You want to hear a great lyric? It's been one of his more popular songs. And it's the opening song, and of course he's in Colorado. Keep that in mind. I used my only phone call to contact my daddy. I got 20 long years for some dust in a baggie. It's a good line. By the time I was 20 years old, I had learned a very hard truth. A very hard truth. You ready? Many of us are in love with being able to do something, but we are not in love with the process of actually figuring out how to do it. My love of guitar taught me that. And admittedly, I was a slow learner. My wife would probably tell you, he still is. In 1974, I'm at a bookstore. There's this brand new book. It is written by a guy named Tom Wheeler. He was some journalist, writer guy. I didn't know who he was, but he owned a Gibson ES-335, same guitar that B.B. King played, who wrote the foreword for the book. And he wrote this book called The Guitar Book, a handbook for electric and acoustic guitarists. Well, I bought this book. It was a big, oversized coffee table kind of a book. And, man, I loved it. I've still got it. 1974. Tom went on to be a writer for Guitar Player magazine. Eventually, he became the chief editor in 1981. And then, you know, as was the moment in time, corporate outfit comes and takes over the magazine. Okay, he's like, I'm out. He jumps ship. He becomes a professor of journalism at the University of Oregon. Died in 2018 at the age of 70 years old. And I only share that because it was his book, this big seminal book in 1974, And it occupied me for 3 years before I finally concluded the truth of my life as it pertains to the guitar. I was more in love with being able to play the guitar than I was actually spending the time necessary to learn how to play. In my mind, I can imagine what it might be like to play like Billy Strings. What I'm not able to imagine, I've never been able to imagine, is the countless hours spent figuring out how to play, which is exactly why Billy Strings is Billy Strings, and I am not. Well, that, and he's got, you know, there is this big talent gap between us as well. That's how you measure a pleasure. That's how you measure an itch. Sacrifice. Action. What are you willing to give up so you can have something? Chet was playing in the boys' restroom of the little country school where he went to school as a boy because, well, the acoustics were so good in there. You know, all that tile. What were the other boys doing? Well, Chet says that there were some boys who had a little bit of money, and they were over there in the opposite corner of the same bathroom, and they're rolling dice. They're gambling while he's over there playing his guitar. Me, had I been at that school, even born in poverty in Eastern Tennessee, I would have likely been outside with a football. And it still wouldn't have resulted in an NFL career, mind you, but that's probably where I would have been. I would have been outside playing or something. Really developing my prowess at something completely worthless. The process is almost always unpleasant and ugly, especially for those of us that aren't doing it. Right? I mean, show me a parent of a kid who's learning to play a musical instrument, and I will show you a miserable human being. Right? I mean, because it's not fun. It's not fun. And it's among the many reasons why you see so many people, they quit playing the guitar. It's just not, it's not fun. It's not pleasant to so many of us. And we're the ones who quit. I mean, did Billy Strings ever suck at the guitar? Of course he did. Probably not for long, but I'm just guessing here. And only his family is likely going to know or remember. And it was so important to them, they likely had this high degree of patience that non-playing parents would not have had. First efforts are sparked more by an itch than pleasure. That's what I've concluded. I'm willing to speculate, based largely on what I know of Billy, and that's quite a lot, that he wanted to be able to play like his dad. You heard him. You heard him in his own voice say so. Wanted to be just like his dad, and he knew his dad was a really good picker. He saw the way people responded when they came over to the house, and he wanted that, and he wanted that badly. That was an itch. That was not a pleasure. That was an itch. The pleasure of practice was the sacrifice and the action that was sparked because the itch was so strong. And I'm speculating here, but in time, the practice became increasingly more pleasurable. And soon enough, well, it was what Chet experienced, right? It was just simply playing because, well, he loved it so. And of course, in both of them, then talent kicked in, and that just catapulted both of them past their peers. My itch was not strong enough to be scratched. When it came to the guitar, you know, I had like this little mosquito bite. Billy, he had full-blown poison ivy, and so did Chet. So that measurement, that was a really key measurement for me. And I don't care what they say, but you can't have everything. Nobody can. It's a fool's errand to think otherwise. Billy Strings has a celebrity net worth. You know you check that website out, don't you? I do. He has a celebrity net worth of $5 million. Now, his dad, I've watched his dad, and you can find him playing with his dad. In fact, they did some concerts back home up in Michigan. His dad, man, his dad's got chops now. His dad's got the chops to have made a living playing music, but he never did it. What he did do is he did teach a little boy, his stepson, a little boy that he clearly loves every bit as much as if he were on his own biological offspring, and clearly Billy loves him every bit as much as if he were his biological dad, who I understand passed away when Billy was very, very little. The bond's just pretty stinking cool to see. Billy is now 27. You know, when I was 27, I did not have a net worth, celebrity or otherwise, of $5 million. What I did have is I had a little boy and I had a little girl. I had a son and a daughter. And I had a wife that I was madly in love with that I'd been married to almost 7 years. And I had a fairly successful business career when I was 27. I had a mentor at the time who was helping me learn more and more about the Bible. I was very active at church, which was a priority. I gave up some things so that I could grab some other things that mattered more. So did my wife. We did that individually, and we did it collectively as a couple together. We gave up some things together so that we could have other things that we felt were more important, more valuable to us. That's where we were when we were 27. You ever said to yourself or somebody else, I made different choices? You ever heard anybody say that? Sure. I made different choices. And we can all say that when we compare our lives to other people. Or maybe we can say it, and we do say it, when we compare it to some ideal that we have of what our life may have been. You measure a pleasure or an itch by the choices you make, by the choices you made, not by the choices that you failed to make. Because even, you know, even if they're the choices that you wish you would have made, no, we measure a pleasure or an itch by what we decided to do. Now, it's super easy. It's super, super easy for us to think that the opposite choice that we didn't make, if we would have made that, it would have worked out swimmingly, right? I very seldom do you hear people who lament having made one choice in option for a different choice, think about, okay, if I'd have made that different choice, boy, it would have worked out horribly for me. No, we tend to think, man, love, I wish I'd have made that choice because, man, it would have been, everything would have been great and wonderful. Well, maybe not. Tap the brakes on that thought because it might have taken you down a really, really bad road. The reality is we only know the outcome of the choices we did make. Everything else is fantasy. And maybe that's why the process has to matter more than the outcome. Maybe that's why Billy Strings loves playing the guitar. And I enjoy listening to guys and gals like him play. He admits he knows he's blessed to play the guitar for a living. But you know what? He also acknowledges, and you can say, well, he's lying. No, I don't think so. He'd be playing the guitar anyway. His dad is. He might not be playing it for a living, but he'd be playing it. I believe him. And you know what? I'd be listening no matter what. We love to fascinate. And we love to fascinate our imaginations with what might have been. Mostly fixating on, like I said, those ideal outcomes, those really positive outcomes. In bedrooms and small spaces all over the world, there are kids with guitars in hand who are learning how to fret a guitar. They are learning the very basic chords of a guitar, and they're dreaming of being Billy Strings. They are dreaming of being whoever their favorite guitar player is. Some are putting in the work, and others, okay, not so much. But they're all dreaming. They're all dreaming. Time will tell. Well, maybe, maybe not. Time will tell if some of them have a strong enough itch or a strong enough pleasure, coupled with high enough talent to make that dream a reality. Billy Strings is having success. Now, listen, he's never going to displace Taylor Swift. She is estimated, by the way, celebrity net worth, she's estimated to be worth $360 million. That's probably light. Now, okay, now, let's be fair. Let's be really fair. She's 3 years older than Billy, so she's got a 3-year head start on him. Got nothing to do with it. You know how I know he loves it? I'm going to embed. There's a video of him. I think this was in, this was in August of 2014. It's a video. he's playing with a mandolin player. This is before he has his little four-string group now, and it's before he was quite as big a deal. And he's playing in the summer of 2014. And I want you to watch his face. Go to the website and click play on this and watch his face. Watch his face when he's playing. Except for this pandemic, the guy is playing 200 shows a year. I mean, the man is living on the road. And he has been doing this, well, probably almost since this video that I'm going to post from the summer of 2014 happened. He is earning fans the hard way. He's playing live. You don't hear his stuff on the radio. You don't see his stuff on the TV. The guy loves to play. He loves performing. And get this, he's playing bluegrass coupled with a heavy metal vibe. Now, you don't have to know anything about music to know that pop music is way more profitable than bluegrass. Just way more popular and profitable. Another reason that I know he loves it, he's devoted to this genre, not because there's money in it, because, well, there isn't any money in it. He's in it because it's who he is. He's in it because this is where his roots are. He's in it because he grew up with this stuff. And you can read and you can watch interview after interview, and he talks about these memories that come up. When he plays certain songs, he's got really deep memories attached to these songs that his father taught him to play. His itch is his pleasure. Pursuit. Pursuit is worth the action. It is worth the sacrifice. Do you measure a pleasure or an itch by whether or not you can succeed at it? Some people do. I get it. You know, I myself have often said, if it's worth fighting for, then it's worth winning. I've also asked the question, why fight unless there's some hope of victory? And even though I've said both of those things for a large portion of my life, I'm not sure that either one of them is correct. You know, sometimes the fight is worth fighting just because you enjoy the fight. I used to box with my next door neighbor, Ray. Ray had boxing gloves and he knew how to box. I loved boxing. And he knew what he was doing. I didn't have a clue, not at first. You know, because Ray was the kind of kid, he got in trouble at school. He got suspended for fighting. I have never yet been in a fist fight, ever. No, I'm not looking to get in one, mind you. But I did love the process. Boxing was fun. And I remember just nagging him, you know, hey, let's box. It didn't matter if I got punched in the nose by Ray time and time again until I learned to hit him in the nose, which I learned very quickly, by the way. Way yonder more fun. Yeah, whole lot more fun to punch Ray in the nose than to be punched in the nose by Ray. And it didn't matter. I enjoyed boxing, even if I lost. It was fun because the process was pleasurable, which brings up another word, doing. Doing. Does the itch compel you to do something that you would not otherwise do? Do you enjoy doing it? Do you enjoy doing it enough that you will forego doing something else? Why am I over at Ray's house knocking on the door saying, hey, you want a box? I mean, there were a ton of things that we did. He had a little mini scooter. It was great fun. We had tree houses. They were great fun. We had pine trees to play in. That was enormous fun. Many nights, I would just soon have headphones on and have Billy Strings or somebody else playing in my ears than sleep. That's right. And I rather love to sleep. Now, evidently, I'm awful at it, but I do love it. But evidently, I love listening to music more. Other nights, kind of like now, I'll add one more action to the equation. Insert writing. The itch is, you know, the itch is thinking about all this stuff. The itch is trying to figure this stuff out. The itch is trying to find ways to communicate and to tell some stories that can get through to help you. I don't claim to be good at it, but I do absolutely love it. I mean, if I didn't, I wouldn't do it. I'd do something else. I'd find another itch to scratch. Maybe not. Have you ever tried to manage such things? I mean, for instance, have you ever tried to increase your passion for something because you know you're just not pursuing it to the degree that you could or you should? I mean, I'm curious how that worked out for you, because I've never been able to do it. I have never ever been able to fabricate an itch. And maybe I'm just inept at it. You know, because for me, it's every bit like having a preference for one flavor of milkshake over another. And I've talked about this in the past. I mean, it just is what it is. I don't have any real understanding of why, and I can't explain it. But if I were to try to make strawberry milkshakes my favorite, I'm not going to be able to pull that off. I love strawberry. I've got strawberry-flavored water sitting right in front of me, but I'm more likely going to pick vanilla even over the chocolate. And I love chocolate. I don't know why, but I've never been able to influence myself to be something other than what I am. I don't think I could say, you know what, I'm just gonna practice and make up my mind that strawberry milkshakes are going to be my favorite flavor now. Do you know how to do that? Because I might be interested in learning. Maybe you can do it. I would like to hear about it, if you have been able to influence your itches like that. I'd imagine that it's quite powerful if you could make yourself have an itch where one did not exist, but I'm really mostly thinking about, what if you had the ability to intensify an itch where you had one, it just wasn't quite strong enough to fuel you to take some real action, so you were able to elevate it so that you could. That's interesting. Hey, let me give you one final thought before I go. I wonder if this resonates with you. I often get way too fascinated with wondering what an itch or a pleasure might I be able to take advantage of, but I just don't have them. Mostly I wonder about unrealized talent. You ever wonder about that? I mean, I wonder some nights. I wonder a lot of the time. What might I be good at? But I don't have a clue, because I've never tried it. Do you ever think like that? I don't know if this is an old age thing or not. Well, I've always thought this, so it's not an old age thing, because I remember thinking this when I was just a kid. You ever wonder that about yourself? Wonder if I'd be good at this, but whatever the this is, you've never tried. I'm pretty sure that all of us have talents that we will never know about. Now, there is absolutely zero evidence that I'm right about that, of course. It's just intuition. But it seems logical, though, doesn't it? Given how many things that a human being could pursue, doesn't it seem logical that there have to be some pursuits that you could pursue that you might be really, really good at, but you have no way of knowing because you've not tried them yet? And it's highly improbable that you will have tried them because, well, there are so many things to try. I would have made different choices, perhaps, if I had the insight into things like that. I mean, if I had the insight into what I'd be good at. I mean, don't you suppose we would all make different choices? By the seventh grade, I knew that math was not likely going to be a dominant player in my future. I did know by seventh grade that words and speech were likely going to be really prominent players for me. And from an early age, way before the seventh grade, I kind of sort of figured out that communication was going to be in my wheelhouse. Science, probably not so much. And maybe we just enjoy imagining what it might be like to be world class at something because, well, come on, let's face it, most of us are not world class at anything. And I'm not naive enough to think that it's possible. I am mature enough to know that it doesn't matter. Being world-class, that is. We can provide big value without being world-class. Still, it's kind of nice to imagine what it might be like, right? To be top-notch at something. Which is why Billy Strings and other proficient musicians just really capture my imagination so much. I mean, to be able to pick up a guitar and be able to play with other musicians, whether they're playing a banjo or a mandolin or a stand-up bass or a violin, it doesn't matter. To be able to play with other musicians and follow them wherever they go musically and make it sound musical, that's just, I mean, I'm sorry, but that is just something beyond my ability to comprehend. except for the fact that I have seen Billy and other musicians do it. So I know it can be done. I absolutely have no clue how. I watch him, and I have got no clue how he does it. I have watched other musicians. You know, they've got these reaction shows on YouTube. I watch a few of these every now and again. And there are some of these guys that have done reaction videos to him. And some of these guys are accomplished guitarists in their own right, and they just sit there, and their mouth is just dropped. I mean, they haven't. It's like I have no clue how he just did what he did. And they've been playing the instrument a lot longer than he's been playing it. Now, don't get me wrong. Again, I don't think we have to be that exceptional to be super valuable to the world. So this is not about our worth to the world or the memories that we're able to have for ourselves and create in the lives of other people. But man, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice to be world class at something? I'm not that good at anything. I really am not. Certainly not something that could be performed so that other people might notice, which is a whole nother aspect of this that really fascinates me. You know, I can look at Billy's face and at his body when he is playing the guitar, and I can know how deep the pleasure goes and how big of an itch he has got when it comes to making music on a guitar, because I can see the performance. I think back of my life, and most of my biggest moments have been done when nobody was looking. Right? I mean, business decisions, one-on-one coaching, you know, maybe me and one other person knew and nobody else knows. And listen, that suits me fine because I'm an introvert. But, you know, sometimes wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice if at least your family could see you at your best instead of your worst? Oh, I've performed magnificently at my worst in front of folks, but probably not my best. Listen, it speaks to the notion that you can't improve anything if you can't measure it, right? We kind of started the show off with that sentiment. And maybe whoever said that, maybe they were onto something. I don't know. If we could accurately measure a pleasure or an itch, then maybe we could improve it. Although it completely escapes me how. And then again, there are some itches that should not be scratched. And like I said at the outset, that's a whole nother episode. You know, all those selfish mongrels who are chasing whatever sin pleases them without any consideration to who they hurt or what they do or the impact or the memories that they're creating, not only for themselves and the guilt and the shame and the embarrassment, but the memories they're creating for other people, like the lady in the supermarket in Dallas. Which is why I began the show talking about us pursuing and having honorable and moral itches and pleasures. Lately, I'm having a harder time identifying a pleasure or an itch. A passion, if you please. That's what the world loves to call it. Culture loves to call it passion. Never mind measuring the stupid things. And I don't know, maybe I'm just nearing the end of the line. Because I just don't much think in terms of pleasures or itches anymore. I really think more in terms of figuring out if tonight, am I going to be sleeping or am I going to be watching Billy Strings? The odds are real heavy in Billy's favor. Did I say last time that I might try to podcast here more frequently and a little less long? You're not holding me to that, are you? Good. I'm glad you're flexible like that. But I do appreciate you investing the time if you made it all the way to this point. Listen, hard to measure a pleasure or an itch. I'm working on it. I'm working on so many things, you know, because that's what Leaning Forward Wisdom is all about. Pursuit is the last word in the tagline. Modern tales of an ancient pursuit. What are we pursuing? Wisdom, of course. Never said I had it down. Never said I was even close. Just said I'm committed to the process here. And I hope you are too. I'm really thankful that you are committed to the process of listening. So there's that. So kudos for that. I'm going to call you world class for that. The website is leaningtowardwisdom.com. Season 2020, episode 9. There are videos over there that I really want you to see. You really, if you may not care one thing about bluegrass, but Billy Strings is worth, he's worth paying some attention to. And if you care to join the private Facebook group, you can do that too. I appreciate you subscribing. I appreciate you listening. My name is Randy Cantrell. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.